It's Wednesday, December 2nd, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Been pretty busy this afternoon working down at Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe. We're putting in new television screens there for people to enjoy the news and the sporting events. Oregon's big Civil War football game is tomorrow, so you can understand the need for getting this done quickly. But it also allows me to bring you some good news about Normal Show Live. We're installing a high-speed business internet there, 22 megabit line, and that means we'll be able to do Normal Show Live from the Cannabis Cafe nearly every Saturday night. The big problem was the lack of high-speed internet there, and now that we've got it, there's no reason not to take advantage of the live audience as well as the historic location. So you'll be able to call in and talk to folks here at the cafe that are taking advantage of Oregon law to medicate out of public view. It's quite a wonderful thing. On this weekend show, we'll be talking to Ryan Tracy. He's the original webmaster behind CheechandChong.com. And then in our second hour, we'll be talking to Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. His website was just recently dropped by PayPal because he accepts business advertising from medical marijuana clinics and dispensaries, just like what happened to California Normal. So we'll talk to him about that on Saturday night. Now, coming up on your daily audio stash, we'll begin with your hemp headlines, including a look at the case in San Diego for Jovan Jackson, who was just acquitted yesterday. He's a dispensary collective owner down there in San Diego, and this might be good precedent for some of the other cases coming up through the system. We have a study that takes a look at natural cannabinoid extracts versus just plain old THC in controlling intractable cancer pain. And a sheriff involved with the campaign against marijuana planting in California half-heartedly thinks it should just be made legal. Our Daily Toker Tunes today bring you Irie Wednesday, brought to you by Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers. And today's song is by Ja Roots, and it's called Spliff and My Lady. And, of course, today is Cannabis Science Day, so we'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and today's topic is the use of cannabinoids as replacement therapy for heroin or alcohol addiction. Very interesting topic. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
write me a foe or fill me a bomb. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. On Thursday, December 3rd, Cleveland Normal is having their December meeting on the west side at Edison's Pub. Philly Normal will also be having their open meeting at the A Space, 4722 Baltimore Avenue in Philadelphia. And Oberlin College Normal in Ohio will be having a weekly meeting live with Dr. Lester Grinspoon via webcam. He's, of course, the professor emeritus of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the author and co-author of Marijuana Reconsidered and Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. On Saturday, December 5th, the Normal Key West Legal Seminar takes place in Key West, December 5th and December 6th. Check out normal.org for more details. Attorneys can earn continuing legal education credits for attendance. Also on Saturday, December 5th, Ohio Normal is having their holiday party at Club Lafayette in Lodi. And Normal Show Live is on the air from Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe. Check out live.normal.org for details. On Sunday, December 6th, Jack Cole from LEAP will be speaking at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. Call 888-KC-NORMAL for details. And he will also be at the University of Missouri later that afternoon. Again, check out kcnormal.org for details. Lincoln Normal will be having their open meeting in Nebraska on Sunday, December 6th at the Coffee House Panache. On Monday, December 7th, Kansas City Normal has their meeting. And on Tuesday, December 8th, Joplin Normal in Missouri has their meeting at the Blackthorn Pizza and Pub. For more information, including maps, contact information, websites, and more, check out the Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
From Washington, D.C., the belly of the anti-marijuana beast. Season's greetings from Normal staff and the Board of Directors to you and yours. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation, and I sincerely hope your holidays are both safe and hemp-filled.
Hi, this is Normal founder and legal counsel Keith Strop, wishing you a happy holiday from Normal. Let's use this time with family and friends to rededicate ourselves to ending marijuana prohibition and stopping the arrest of responsible marijuana smokers. Happy holidays.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. San Diego collective manager Jovan Jackson found not guilty. From 760 KFMB. The manager of a San Diego medical marijuana collective was acquitted Tuesday of possessing marijuana and selling the drug for profit. The jury, however, convicted 31-year-old Jovan Jackson of possession of ecstasy and Xanax. Jackson cried when he heard the not guilty verdicts being read. Jackson's case was the first to go to trial in the wake of law enforcement raids in September, which resulted in 31 arrests and the shutting down of 14 medical marijuana storefronts in San Diego. Jurors who spoke to reporters after the verdicts said the laws on medical marijuana sales from collectives were vague, prompting them to find the defendant innocent. Quote, on a personal level, if you're going to hold somebody to a law, you have to define that law, end quote, said juror Perry Wright. The number of medical marijuana dispensaries rose recently in the wake of San Diego County's failed attempt to overturn the state's 1996 medical marijuana law and U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's directive that federal agents will only target medical marijuana storefronts when operators violate both state and federal laws. What a wonderful victory for the patients and a stunning defeat for District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis' crusade to overturn Prop 215. This was another case where law enforcement used undercover officers to pose as sick or disabled persons, using a fake identity while lying to a doctor to receive a medical marijuana recommendation. Then, under those assumed identities, the undercover officers take the very real recommendation and their very real-looking state ID cards to these legal collectives, join them, and set up marijuana purchases as a sting. Does it bother anyone else to imagine the planning, coordination, strategy, time, and money San Diego is expending on trying to bring down collectives of growers and patients? Could they work this hard to bring down some human trafficking ring or maybe a corrupt banker or two? Police and prosecutorial resources are finite. Every minute and dollar used to fight medical marijuana, D.A. Dumanis, is time and money diverted from protecting us from actual crimes. Natural cannabis extracts proven superior to THC alone for intractable cancer pain. Plymouth, United Kingdom. The administration of Sativex, an oral spray consisting of natural cannabis extracts, primarily THC and cannabidiol, aka CBD, significantly reduces cancer pain compared to placebo or THC alone, according to clinical trial data published online in the Journal of Pain Management. Authors concluded, quote, "The results of this study show that the THC-CBD extract Sativex is an efficacious adjunctive treatment for cancer-related pain in patients who are not achieving an adequate analgesic response to opioids," end quote. They added, quote, "In this study, the THC-CBD extract showed a more promising efficacy profile than the THC extract alone. This finding is supported by evidence of additional synergy between THC and CBD. CBD may enhance the analgesic potential of THC by means of potent inverse agonism at the CB2 receptors, which may produce anti-inflammatory effects, along with its ability to inhibit immune cell migration. These results are very encouraging and merit further study," end quote. An estimated 25% to 40% of cancer patients experience some type of neuropathic pain for which conventionally available analgesics are not consistently effective. Well, if the whole natural extracts of THC plus CBD are superior to THC alone, what about the whole natural plant compared to the extracts? Does it seem strange to anyone else that they hate the weed so much that they made a THC-only pill called Marinol, and then to improve that, they make a THC plus CBD spray called Sativex? And when they find the other cannabinoids have beneficial effects, will they then extract those to further improve the Sativex? It seems to me a lot of effort to try to make a perfect substitute for a plant rather than just using the plant. Now, I can see the benefits of standardization and knowing the THC-CBD ratios and the dosage. I'm actually not even upset at the corporations that seek to make a profit off of these cannabis-derived drugs. More power to them. These studies help them realize the profit in cannabis and help the public realize the medical power of cannabis. That's going to spur more research. For that to happen in the U.S., cannabis will have to be moved out of Schedule 1. That moves us toward our goal. However, on this path, we must always stand firm on the right of medical users to grow and use the raw plant. Denying suffering people the right to grow their own low-cost, natural, non-toxic pain remedy so that a pharmaceutical corporation or a nonprofit organization can stay in business is flat-out immoral. As we move from protection for a few to re-legalization for us all, the same ethics apply to the right of the cannabis consumer to grow his or her own. California Sheriff, quote, "Part of me wants marijuana legalized," end quote. From National Public Radio, retired Humboldt County Sheriff's Lieutenant Steve Cobine says cultivating cannabis is now a big business in state forests and private timberlands. This year, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, or CAMP, hauled in 4.5 million plants from around California. But Cobine admits that's a tiny percentage of what's really out there. Quote, "We're just keeping a lid on it so it doesn't go crazy," end quote, Cobine says. Instead of burning the confiscated plants like they used to do, Sheriff Sergeant Wayne Hansen says they bury them in undisclosed locations. Quote, basically a marijuana plant's 90% water, he says. So we dig a hole 10 feet down, throw a bunch of soil on it, and it's basically destroyed then, just by the compression of the earth. End quote. As they haul off a truckload of confiscated plants, Hansen makes a somewhat surprising admission. Quote, part of me wants marijuana legalized, he says, because it would take away the wealth and the greed and the violence. End quote. But he says it would have to be legalized in all of the U.S., not just California. Quote, because if it gets legalized in California, you'd have all the riffraff coming to California to make money to sell to the other 49 states, end quote, he says. We're all for that solution, Sheriff Hansen. However, you and I both know that prohibition of cannabis took over this country state by state and was illegal in all 48 states before the feds ever got around to it. Ending prohibition will have to happen the same way. Some state will have to do it first. And California's part of the way there already. When California re-legalizes cannabis, and the nearby states see the windfall, they'll re-legalize soon after. At least Oregon. During that interim period, sure, there are likely to be carpetbaggers rushing in to help fulfill marijuana demand in other states. But that just means American marijuana money going to legal growers in California instead of lining the pockets of Mexican drug gangs.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. For our Daily Toker Tune today, I apologize, I don't have a lot of information on the artist. It's Ja Roots, and the song is called Spliffin' My Lady, and it was a tune that Johnny Reaverseed sent to me when he was applying to be a music editor. I never did manage to find any information on the artist, but I do have a link to his MySpace. It's myspace.com/JaRoots. If you have any information on Ja Roots, please send it to us here at stash@normal.org. We'd love to give him all the proper credit. This is Ja Roots with Spliff and My Lady.
Baby, I would like it if we could just stay at home. You're not worried about a thing, girl, not even put your makeup on. No, no problems, no bills, no cars, nothing, girl. Just you and me make a sweet love all night long. Yeah, cause my girl, she burns with me now every day. Yeah, it's a love. dancing, baby, just to give me a light. I said nothing like a spliff from a lady at my side.
This will take up the whole afternoon. Well, I don't care, cause you're the greatest. In me world, there is no other girl that ever take you. Out of me life, I say there is no one that could replace you. I must say that anybody ever said I take back. I'm trying to be a better man, but no, I am not perfect. Still, I can try deep down inside. Do not just let these feelings hide. When we're trying to build a better kind of life for you
so
and I.
My girl, she burns in me now every day.
And I will roll up your spliffs so that we both get high. Spend some quality time together, just enjoying this life. Thinking about the future together, how we pass through the time. When we sit back and talk, I like to watch the smoke rise. There's no need to worry about the troubles, leave them outside. If I said I didn't love you, girl, will that be a lie? What I'm really trying to say is, girl, I'm glad that you're mine.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? contact us at Normal, toll free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at normal, NORML.org.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. We're back with Dr. Mitch Earlywine for another dose of cannabis science. Welcome back, sir.
Glad to be back.
Okay, for today's topic, we got some studies that came across the email. Dr. Mitch and I are on a lot of the same email lists, and this one was really interesting to me. Ethan Russo sent it on by, and it was a study on cannabidiol, or what we sometimes call CBD, being a potential treatment for heroin craving and relapse. And this also goes along with a story that I had put up on the stash on Tuesday about marijuana being used as a substitution treatment for harder drugs. And so, Dr. Earlywine, I thought we'd just pick your brain on this and talk about the cannabidiol here. What's the story on that?
Well, it's neat because, you know, THC is the cannabinoid that we give the most attention to, and it does seem to be the primary source of a lot of the psychoactive effects of cannabis. But cannabidiol is also, you know, relatively prevalent and has own unique properties that we're discovering more and more every day. Part of my argument against Marinol sometimes is that it's just pure THC in a pill, and you don't get the other cannabinoids like you do in medical cannabis. And it can be a very intoxicating, almost just delusion-making substance all on its own, and cannabidiol can kind of take the edge off that in strains that have both THT and CBD, and we've seen a lot of that from the GW Pharmaceuticals group. But cannabidiol by itself also has some really intriguing properties. We already have seen some incredible impact on, of all things, seizure, and it has its own unique impact on insomnia, so that CBD strains may be as good or better than other strains for treating problems with sleep. But now we have some really intriguing new data essentially showing that CBD can decrease craving for heroin and seeking out of the opiates. And this has been something that, you know, we've been hearing about sort of informally for years, but this is really one of the first studies to show not only that this is a possibility, but actually suggesting what might be going on in the brain so that the CBD is working sort of downstream from some of these same receptors that the opiates hit and going to some of the same brain areas. So it's a very tenable, pharmacologically comprehensible way to block some of the problems associated with long-term use of the opiates.
And what are, you know, some of the other treatments that are being used for people with heroin addictions? There's Ibogaine and all these other treatment options. How does the cannabidiol compare to those with regard to, you know, possible side effects or other problems?
Well, I mean, cannabidiol, it's funny because unlike THC, it's essentially not even psychoactive. So if you did do a moderate amount of cannabidiol, it's unlikely that you would even notice any changes in thought or mood or anything like that. So I feel like folks who are concerned about THC's impact on thinking or mood or anything like that wouldn't have this worry with cannabidiol. Treatment of heroin addiction is notoriously tough, and we've used a lot of substitution drugs over the years, particularly methadone, which essentially gets in there and stimulates the same receptors, but just not as much, or a whole bunch of drugs that basically block the impact of heroin, things like naltrexone, where people take it, and then if they do shoot up, they won't get any of the euphoric effects of heroin. But this is, in a sense, a much better potential treatment because this is going to decrease the craving in a way that'll probably make it so folks wouldn't turn to it in the first place. Mm. Now, even going back to the 1940s when John Irwin was writing about this kind of thing, he always pointed out that a lot of heroin users either don't like cannabis or don't want to use cannabis when they're using the opiates because it kind of makes the impact less dramatic. And I feel like this is a wonderful pharmacological explanation for that and kind of explains how this might have a whole lot of potential as a new treatment.
Yeah. So do you think maybe that it would be more of an adjunct treatment along with other treatments?
I feel like the psychotherapy required for the treatment of heroin addiction is pretty extensive. It does take, at least, I'd say 16 sessions to really teach folks not only, you know, how to stay away from the drug, but how to avoid the cues for the drug, how to keep yourself from getting into situations where you're likely to get into relapse. And even my 12-step friends point out that you've got to learn to not get yourself in these stressed out situations that have been good predictors of heroin use in the past. So if you find yourself all hungry, all, you know, worn out, all mad at people, all lonesome with nothing to do, completely tired, those kinds of things, people have to learn how to schedule their lives to keep that to a minimum, to not take on too much, and to not, you know, get themselves in predicaments where heroin is accessible and seems like the thing to do. Some of the drug treatments can help with, you know, craving when it's right there in front of your face, but really the psychological interventions are the ones that tend to keep you from getting in that kind of situation in the first place.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other story that I had on here looked at some of the research by Dr. Amanda Ryman at UC Berkeley, and she surveyed some patients, the Berkeley Patients Group, found out that 40% of the 350 people that she surveyed used cannabis to control alcohol cravings, and 66 others used it to replace other prescription drugs and other potent illegal drugs. I mean, it seems quite obvious that a lot of people would support the idea of substituting cannabis or using a cannabis therapy for heroin, you know, given the risk of each substance here. But it seems like it would be a little more controversial when we start talking about that as a substitution therapy for alcohol and alcoholism. What do you know about this, the research on this, and is it something that should be recommended?
I love Amanda, and I was actually one of the anonymous reviewers on this paper when it was accepted at the journal, and I feel like these data are really intriguing. We've heard people mention this time and again, but if you start thinking about, you know, how could this work just as a mechanism, what would be going on? Generally, folks who have been abusing alcohol for a long time get caught in this amazing rut where they don't even like it anymore so much as they feel like there's this craving and they just have to have it. And the cannabis is an interesting distractor from that, something that they can look forward to at the end of the day in the same way that they did with alcohol, with markedly fewer negative consequences. Unfortunately, this is the kind of stuff that gets you nailed to the cross on the cover of People magazine. It's not what Americans want to hear whenever there's one drug substituted for another. But when you go down the line, as we saw in Paul Armentano's book about, you know, alcohol and cannabis comparisons, this is nowhere near as harmful a drug as alcohol is. And people really seem to resonate with this idea in ways that folks who are, you know, in abstinence-oriented treatments tend to balk at. But this is the kind of thing that can get people to step away from heavy alcohol use and then start thinking about, well, what are the things I want to do? What are the health behaviors that are going to be appropriate for me? And in all honesty, the withdrawal from cannabis is nothing compared to the withdrawal from alcohol. So here's an opportunity to take a step toward a life of abstinence if that's your goal, without having to make it this big, outrageous, horrible deal.
Hmm. And another side to this as well, when we start talking about alcohol and alcoholism, are the people that are rebelling against this idea that a life needs to be totally abstinent, and they start looking at these replacement therapies or these maintenance therapies where they find a way that they can live with just a reasonable amount of alcohol or whatever they're using. Is cannabis a way to go toward that? And what's your opinion on these ideas of, you know, not necessarily having to be completely abstinent?
It's funny because this is a really controversial thing, and it's an approach I took in my book on substance use problems that just came out from the American Psychological Association. In truth, some folks really, you know, enjoy the abstinence life. There was a drug-free floor at USC in the dorms that I spoke at where these folks didn't even want to drink too much caffeine. Mm-hmm. And if that's your choice, by all means, go for it. I think that that's a really admirable, intriguing way to live. But it's not the way for everybody. And the other thing is, I feel like a lot of folks who are having problems with alcohol don't even want to go to treatment in the first place because they know that like 90% plus of the programs around here are abstinence-based. Whereas if you could go one-on-one with somebody who's willing to discuss either control drinking, which is not, you know, anybody's favorite, or the alternative use of either cannabis or some other, you know, psychoactive drug as an alternative, you're going to at least get people to come to that second session in a way that abstinence-based therapists may not be able to get. And so we'll probably see, if not lower dropout rates, an outreach to a much bigger population of folks who have problem drinking who are willing to come in that first time who wouldn't be under other circumstances.
Mm. And don't you find it just a bit funny or ironic that in the same year that we would get headlines about people worrying about substituting cannabis for alcohol, we also get the headlines about using lithium to treat marijuana addiction?
I mean, that one still blows my mind. And lithium is certainly a documented approach for treating bipolar disorder, but it does get toxic. It really is the kind of thing where you have to have your blood work done every month to make sure you're not poisoning yourself, or you could smoke cannabis. that's just a real mind blower. The other thing that Amanda alludes to in that paper is that folks who are essentially having problems with some of the prescription drugs, both opiates and stimulants, often report that cannabis is easing their way off of those. And I'm seeing that more and more, being at an academic institution in the Northeast with a lot of white binge drinking frat. This is getting to be a bigger problem all the time. And I feel like at least entertaining the idea of cannabis as an alternative may lure more people into treatment than a standard abstinence rah-rah may.
It's good to know that this revolution toward looking at cannabis in medical uses is happening, even for the people that are dealing with severe addictions and dependence therapy and treatment. It's good to hear. As far as education for these people, these addictionologists, these doctors that work in substance abuse, are things changing at the medical school level for these people, or are they still behind the science on this?
I do feel like, at least in most of the medical schools I've been to, they're not going to make a big deal out of this until we see a randomized controlled trial, literally assigning some folks to have probably just cannabidiol or some kind of easily administered cannabis in a measurable dose, like some of the sprays or some of the tinctures, rather than vaporized cannabis. Once one of those appears, I think that's going to hit really heavy, really hard, and really quickly. But until a study like that makes it into print, I think medical schools in particular are going to be reluctant. Now, when I was at USC, there was a special day devoted to this kind of thing, and I think that's the sort of thing that's going to spread all around California and other medical cannabis states relatively quickly. What we don't want to see is this turning into just something where people end up drinking a whole lot and smoking cannabis, because we do see alcohol tends to slow metabolism of THC, and in truth, the combination, my student Allison Luby has shown, tends to lead to problems that either drug alone don't lead to. Mm-hmm. In particular, some things related to poor self-esteem, depression, and things like that. So that a lot of this ranting and raving about cannabis causes depression is actually much more easily explained by alcohol consumption. Mm-hmm. And in truth, anybody who feels like, they're having a rough time with alcohol can often find, if they can get the social support, get their activities up that are incompatible with alcohol, so exercising, going places where alcohol is not the center of the entertainment, they do a whole lot better. This is a particularly big deal in the holidays, where you go to somebody's house and you look around and what is there to drink, and there's nothing but booze. What a surprise. You're going to have a much harder time than going to a party where there's plenty of soda, there's plenty to eat, there's plenty to do other than sit around and have, whiskey and soda. And suddenly, they often can take these little steps one at a time until they make a whole lot of progress.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny, especially around the holidays. You mentioned that the family I grew up in, we had a big old extended family, and nobody drank. Nobody was a drinker, other than my father, who was an alcoholic, but he was doing it on the sly. And so I remember as a kid, we'd go to all these holiday functions, and there was never any alcohol to be had. And now I'm married, and I go to my wife's family function, and they're alcohol drinkers. They love the beer, and every family function is centered around the beer and the wine. It's kind of interesting to get that that dual perspective.
Actually, my grandma, ran a still during Prohibition.
Oh,
like,
really?
My family, everybody had a cold beer in their hand, regardless of how cold it was outside or what the holiday was. And I mean, you heard a pop top go at the second her funeral was over. I mean, it was really a big investment in our family, and we've seen slowly but surely people realize this isn't the way I want to go. And in fact, if you're drinking out of habit, you know, it's like, oh, it's 5 o'clock on Friday, therefore I must drink. You're probably not enjoying it as much as if you were actually paying attention, drinking less and less often. And often you can get a handle on this. Of course, if, you know, you're really struggling, there are, you know, 12-step programs everywhere, mental health centers in every major city that are completely willing to talk about it with you. And if you don't want to go, you know, full-blown abstinent, check out my book on substance use problems and look at some of the alternatives.
There we go. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here on the Cannabis Science segment. And we want to encourage everyone to have a happy and sane holidays this month of December. So be safe and be careful. Thanks a lot, Doctor.
Thanks again, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with the reminder to check out the rest of the week's Normal Daily Audio Stash. We've got Dr. Julie Holland will be appearing on tomorrow's stash. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Weekends at Bellevue. Her story of working in the emergency mental health ward at the Bellevue Hospital in New York. On Friday, we'll be talking to Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com to get the latest on PayPal dropping his website. And this weekend on Normal Show Live, we'll be coming to you from Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe with Ryan Tracy, the original webmaster of CheechandChong.com, and more discussion with Steve Bloom from Celeb Stoner. Thanks for downloading the podcast and helping to make us one of the most popular destinations in cyberspace for lovers of cannabis everywhere. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.